Look, Anita, where things first come to my attention, I was going through the internet checking something out, and I came across a copy of your maiden speech. Now, the thing that struck me is that, you know, I've seen a lot of senators and politicians, you know, go through radio studios mm-hmm. over a period of time, and I don't really recall one that would probably know who the local Indigenous crew was, right?
Yeah.
And you, what stuck out for me was that you mentioned the Gagangi people of Yarraba.
Yes.
How did you come in such close contact when everybody else just seems to miss it?
Well, my speech had an overall theme, and I spoke about voice and speaking up and speaking out. And I was very conscious that most speeches that we do these days start out with an acknowledgement of country. And I wanted to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, not only that I was standing on that day in Canberra, but also where I live, which is in North Queensland. And I was struck with this sort of reluctance to just roll through the words as if they didn't mean anything. So I spoke to a few people about the history of this area and the history of the traditional people here. And what came through really clearly was that we have traditional owners that live here in Cairns, but also in Yarraba, who are the people who spoke out and stepped up and made change in our country, and that's what that's how I started off the speech. I wanted to acknowledge the traditional owners, but not just because they live here, but because of the incredible changes that they've made to their community.
But you must have some interest in Indigenous people to have done that. A lot of people just give it lip service.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think you can't live in far north Queensland and not have an appreciation or an understanding that this is an ancient place, a prehistoric place, really, that belongs to Indigenous people. And my I'm a union member, and I come from the union movement, and I've been involved in the discussion around the Uluru Statement, but really just trying to learn as much as I possibly can, because I can tell from the people that I speak to that it's an incredibly important thing for me to understand as a representative of people, not just, you know, not just people that live in Cairns, but people who live all over Queensland who are traditional owners.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's quite unusual, because you know, well, like I say, I've seen that procession of people that have not understood. They've gone their full term of parliament, or they've gone numerous terms of parliament, and have never ever acknowledged the traditional owners of this country. You know, in a full context, as a, you know, they can say it when we welcome the traditional owners of the land. You've all heard those kinds of speeches, but to go a step deeper and a step deeper than that is what's unusual.
Well, I just want to say to that, Greg, I think part of the reason why you've seen the change is I'm not your average senator. And I'm part of a group of new, younger people who have put their hand up to be a part of Parliament, because traditionally Parliament, and particularly the Senate, has been dominated by older people from older generations, predominantly white and male. And you are seeing now a new generation of parliamentarians come through who are not prepared to just wait their turn, who decided that it was time to put their hand up and be a part of the conversation, because without that, we're not getting the diversity of voices that we need.
Well, that is refreshing news, I can tell you, because, I've seen a few terms of Parliament come and go. Look, to move off that topic and onto another one that's quite big at the moment, especially for Indigenous people, is basically it's not stealing, because it's all been done legitimately, but the copyright of the flag, the Indigenous flag, has been sold to other parties, non-Indigenous parties, that are then charging other people to use the Aboriginal flag. and there's many, many people not happy about it. And a lot of people just don't know exactly, well, what can we do about it? It was a legitimate transaction. Mm. It was legal. People feel powerless.
Yeah, I mean, and I would feel that powerless too, because I don't understand copyright law the way that other people do. I was a lawyer, but I practiced in employment law. So copyright law is completely new to me. And I've just been listening to the voices of people that this really affects, and it's the Indigenous people who use that flag because it is their representation of sovereignty and of identity. And I think it's something that the government really needs to look at, whether there is some action that can be taken. It seems like that is something that should not be commercialised, that it is not something that should be reserved for a few people who have the ability and willingness to pay for it.
Yeah, well, as Nova was just saying, you don't have to pay for copyright use of the Australian flag. You can get that on a shirt, no problem at all. Mm. The moment you put an Aboriginal flag motif on your shirt or your T-shirt or whatever, you're up for copyright fees to these people that have bought the copyright to the emblem.
Yeah, and I think there possibly is some legislation that the government could consider that we haven't seen any come through this parliament yet. I will say Labor has what we refer to as a First Nations caucus, which is a group of our Indigenous politicians, so Senator Malindiri McCarthy, Senator Dodson, Linda Burney. They chair a group of members of our caucus, and all issues related to Indigenous policy go through that caucus for approval before they're able to be considered by the Labor Party fully.
Yeah,
and I am obviously a member of that caucus because of the huge population of Indigenous people that live in my backyard, in my electorate. And I think this is a topic that we could put as a standing item and see if there's something that we can put forward or resolve within that caucus to have a policy around what the Labor Party thinks and believes around this issue going forward. But it needs to be resolved. We can't keep going on
as
like
of
this.
Yesterday. I mean, who can ever forget Cathy Freeman running with the flag? You know what I mean?
It's part
of Australia. Yeah. You know, it's a part of who we are now.
That's right.
And for two people to say, look, we were going to have ownership of that. Yeah, it's a road ahead and one that that needs to be obviously looked at. Mm. The other thing I'd like to touch upon is your early years. I read a little bit of your background, and it was not so easy for you growing up in your early years.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Western Sydney.
Yeah.
My father was a really hard worker and someone who instilled in me the need to be educated and to work hard to get ahead. But he also had a dark side, and he was an abusive and a violent person. And my mother was a nurse, and she did a lot to protect us and shield us from, I think, what was some pretty awful experiences. And it's only now when I look back as an older person, understand the reality that I grew up in really did mean that we were in some situations that Mum had to, you know, take some fast action to get us out of, including, I mean, I remember I spoke about this in my first speech. You know, one of my earliest memories is leaving in the middle of the night and having to walk the long way around the block so we wouldn't get found. And that's something as a three-year-old, you just sort of go with the flow and you do what your mum says. But now when I look back, I realise that must have been a pretty harrowing experience for her to go through.
I look at you today, and you say to me that you've kind of left those demons behind. You're in a different space.
Yeah, I think most people who grew up in a life like that, and I'm certainly not the only person. I appreciate that. Because my mum had a stable, secure job, and quite frankly, because she was a white woman, she got access to a lot of support that she could, you know, get. So our life tended to normalize after a few years of really struggling. But for me, what it did was give me perspective on the fact that there are a lot of people out there right now who are doing it tough. There are people right now who are planning to leave the family situation that they're in, and they don't have anywhere to go. So if I seem like I'm a normal person, or that experience made me who I am. It made me want to fight for people to make sure that the next family that needs to leave has somewhere to go.
Nita Green, you now know where we live, right? So we'd love to have you back in the studios or on the telephone at sometime in the not-too-distant future, and to stay in contact during your term in Parliament. Could I just ask you, probably, what is the most important thing that you want to take into the ALP at the moment, you know, your highest priority that you want to take to the party and say, look, this is important for my electorate, this is important for Australia, something like that?
The most important thing at the moment is to make sure that we don't lose the voices of regional Australians down in Canberra, which is a place where politicians come from all over the country, and a lot of them do live in metropolitan areas. A lot of funding goes into our big capital cities, and I want to make sure that when I'm in whatever room I'm in Canberra, whether that's the ALP caucus or whether it's the Senate chamber, I'm there as a voice for people who live outside of big cities, and I'm there as a voice of people who live in remote communities but deserve exactly the same access to health and education and infrastructure that people in big cities enjoy. So that's the main thing I'll be taking into Canberra when I'm down there.
And as far as accessibility, people listening, we're broadcasting at the moment from the Tablelands right to the very top of Australia to Bamaga, which is a fair hoik. So people, if they do ever come to Cairns, and then they may make that long trip on the PDR, how do they go about finding where you are?
So at the moment, we're in the process of setting up a permanent office, which is very exciting because Cairns hasn't had a Senate office for about 3 years.
Yeah.
We have a temporary office located in the Boland Centre, which means that you can make an appointment and drop in, but eventually we will essentially have a shop front that you can just walk in the door. And I think that is important because a lot of people do come to Cairns to transact their business, or they come to visit family. But the other really important thing I must mention is I have every intention to visit as many remote communities and Torres Strait Islands as I possibly can, particularly in the first 6 to 12 months. So I'm already in the process of planning trips up to the Cape, out to Kawanyama, and making sure that I get across to Thursday Island and Horn Island to really understand the issues on the ground. There's no point in me trying to talk about how difficult it is for people in remote communities from Cairns, which is essentially very accessible to most people. I need to be on the ground in the community to understand that.
And go there with really listening, because, politicians have had a bit of a bad track record of flying in, sticking around for half an hour, and gone again, and not really picking up the gutsy, down-to-earth issues that need addressing. Yeah.
But isn't this the whole discussion that we're having now is Indigenous people are now at a point where they don't want to be spoken at anymore. They want to be listened to, and I genuinely believe that's my role as a politician more than anything else.
You nailed it, Martha, when you said spoken at. They're tired of that, very tired. And they'll welcome you, I'm quite sure.
Oh, thanks.
Nita Green, thank you so much for sharing studio time with us. Hopefully we'll do it again in the near future, and catch up again real soon.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.